Hi everyone, thank you for joining the Clinical Radiology podcast today. Today we have Dr. Low joining us to discuss her paper on pediatric penetrating injuries, looking specifically at findings from a pediatric major trauma centre in the UK. Without further ado, I'll hand over to Dr. Low. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about yourself, please?
Hi, so I'm Sam Low, and I'm currently a consultant pediatric and adult MSK radiologist at the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital. Prior to this, I did two post-CCT fellowships, one in pediatric radiology at the Birmingham Children's Hospital, and another in musculoskeletal radiology at the Royal Liverpool Hospital, having also spent some time in Alderhay. And it's really during my time in the Birmingham Children's Hospital that we started on this paper.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Sam. So as we said, we're going to discuss your paper on pediatric penetrating injuries. And you've said in the paper, of course, that these are very rare, thankfully, especially in centres that aren't dedicated to major trauma centres. So what prompted this work and why do you think it's important?
Yeah, so I think the credit for starting this piece of work really goes to Dr. York Tan and Dr. Carl Johnson, two of the authors in the paper, and Dr. Johnson being the senior author. So Dr. Tan, or York, was looking into pediatric stabbing from an epidemiological and socioeconomic viewpoint. He wanted to find out if the stabbing rates in the Midlands, as he was a ST7 ED trainee then, they were increasing. Because recently there were published data from London, a paper by Vuliami, published in the BMJ Open. And from there, he wanted to find out if there were areas of improvement or areas for improvement with regards to referrals to social care and the police force for these patients who presented through ED. And I think they met through the EDMDTs, and Dr. Johnson had always felt that the available guidance around pediatric stabbing could be improved, particularly when he was also involved in the initial RCR guidance. And for me, I was simply in the right place at the right time, really.
Thank you for sharing the background to that. It's actually really interesting, isn't it? So you looked at the findings from your particular centre in this paper, of course. Would you be able to kind of summarise what the main findings were and perhaps talk about whether this is similar to other centres?
Yeah, so firstly, I think I need to just highlight or reiterate that the aims of this study was first, we wanted to describe the prevalence of penetrating injuries from a regional tertiary level pediatric multi-trauma centre, Birmingham being one of the five. And secondly, to report on the immediate trauma management and then paying attention particularly to the imaging strategies for such patients. So the other two papers, they are a bit more similar and in recently published were ones, as I mentioned earlier, from Vuliami and another one from Melling in Liverpool. So our clinical data definitely reflects this, the work by them, and is very similar, describing these penetrating trauma cases in a large urban area. So London and versus Birmingham versus Liverpool. And similar to the Vuliami study, we found a small increase in the number of stabbing cases, although this was not seen in the Melling study. The majority of cases, as you know, would be adults and boys who lived in socioeconomically deprived backgrounds. I think what was interesting to me was that these attacks happened most at weekends, after school hours, and in public places. Things that I didn't really quite think about before doing this paper. And as for the clinical parameters for these patients, I think it's harder to compare the extent of these injuries as this was not always mentioned in their papers. And certainly must be taken into account that the other two papers, Vuliami and Melling, was really looking more at an epidemiological perspective rather than a clinical perspective.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that you mentioned the things about when these attacks were happening, for example, after school hours or at weekends, because as interesting as the clinical aspect of the paper was, I found that aspect of your paper really interesting to read myself as well.
Yes, I guess I never thought about when it would happen, but it would make sense because if you're in school, you have commitments, and really, I guess the trouble starts when you're outside and you know, you don't have all these commitments that you need to, you don't have to be in a certain place at a certain time. So thinking back about it, she sounds quite logical. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, I think once I read it, it made sense. But actually having that in the paper was really helpful in providing some context and some extra interest when reading the paper. So I wanted to move on to next. I guess you mentioned that part of the reasoning for this paper was that there wasn't really much in the way of guidance. What, if anything, does the guidance say on pediatric penetrating injury imaging particularly?
Yeah, so at present, I believe the latest guidelines are the 2014 guidelines. And in it, the protocol, the RCR pediatric trauma protocol, mentions that penetrating trauma is an indication for contrast-enhanced CT chest due to the incidence of occult vascular injury. However, it does leave the decision for any abdominal CT imaging to be based on the clinical findings. And in the clinic, in the pediatric patient who has suffered head trauma, CT may be performed, you know, following appropriate assessment and resuscitation while taking into account the NICE algorithm. And this is also similar for neck imaging. So apart from specifically mentioning about the contrast-enhanced chest CT, I think a lot of it is still based very much on the clinician-radiologist discussion.
Yeah. So actually, what you've suggested in this paper is probably really useful. You have suggested an algorithm that could be followed. Would you be able to summarize this for the listeners at all?
Yeah. So I think before I go into the algorithm, I think the first point, or rather the main point that I'd like to highlight or for everybody to take away, is that this algorithm still relies very heavily on the findings from the clinician-patient contact. So if there are felt to be limitations in obtaining an accurate history from the injured child, then the threshold for imaging should be altered appropriately. And the algorithm is really there just as a guide and not specifically a pathway to follow. So, yeah. But otherwise, the summary of the algorithm is that when the child presents with a penetrating injury, the chest x-ray can be performed, and this would help in identifying any pathology that would require immediate treatment, such as a pneumo or hemothorax. But if a CT chest was going to be done instead, then we can, you know, minimize the radiation and avoid the need for a chest x-ray. And then subsequently, selective contrast-enhanced CT imaging should be performed for penetrating injuries to the respective body parts as guided by the clinical examination. You can then divide this into isolated or multiple. So in isolated injuries, we think it's acceptable to image the single body part that corresponds to the injury unless the entry wound crosses or occurs at the junction of two body parts, or if the history suggests that there's a wound depth or trajectory that crosses these two body parts. And logically, so a wider CT coverage would be beneficial to allow for the identification of anything that's unexpected distal or proximal injury. And of course, where there are multiple stab wounds or visible injuries involving the torso, so the trunk of the body, then full chest, abdominal and pelvic imaging should be performed.
Perfect. Thank you so much for summarizing Sam. I think that's really useful. And for those who want to look at the algorithm in kind of image or decision tree form, there is a copy in the paper itself if you want to have a look. So that's really useful. I'd be interested to hear whether you've, of course, whether you've implemented this algorithm at your centre, although I appreciate that your centre at the time was Birmingham and you're not there anymore, and whether there's been any follow-up to assess whether it's been useful or not.
So I think Birmingham, like many of the dedicated paediatric trauma centres, have the availability of paediatric dedicated healthcare professionals which work very closely together. And so certainly during my time in Birmingham and having been on call there, I know the radiologists work very closely. So trainees versus radiologists proper, they work very closely with the clinicians, and especially so with the ED clinicians, which is why we worked so closely with York, Dr. Tan, in to understand the nature of the injury in the child, what worries them and what needs to be scanned. So personally, I don't think this algorithm is new to Birmingham, at least at the time of writing. So I think what we need to understand is that each child in each case is very unique, and the discussion between the clinician and the radiologist is most important to decide what's best for each scenario. As I said earlier, the algorithm is not prescriptive and serves more like a guide rather than a pathway. So for example, if you have a child with the same injuries, which can be seen clinically, or rather you have two kids with the same injuries, but with different conscious levels, you may want to image more extensively in the less conscious child to account for the suboptimal history. So I can't say that we have implemented it, but I think we've always practiced this. As for the follow-up, I don't think we have any formal follow-up plans, as most of these cases are always discussed in the weekly EDMDT informally. So if there are any changes that we need to implement, this is done in an iterative way. Yeah.
Yep. Completely get what you're saying, and that makes complete sense. It sounds like you've been following this approach at Birmingham for quite a long time now. But regardless, right, having this formalized in algorithm form, as you say, would be a really useful guidance for people who aren't so used to dealing with this clinical situation.
That's right.
So I just kind of on that note wanted to ask you if you had any tips for people who might come across these cases, both for, well, for radiologists, both for protocoling scans, but also reporting scans, especially bearing in mind that often it will be out of hours that these cases present and you might not have a consultant to support you if you're a trainee, for example.
Absolutely. So I think there's a main theme here, which I've kind of reiterated throughout the different questions, is really speak to your clinician. So speak to the clinician who has examined the patient, and if possible, find out the location of injuries that they can see clinically and the implement or the weapon that was used, if known, because this would help in determining how much you need to scan and the identification of associated visceral injuries, as you then have an idea of the wound trajectory when reporting, because versus like length of knife, you can know if it's, you know, 5 centimeters versus 10 centimeter long blade. You can then have an idea of the circumference and the trajectory. So of course, the caveat here is that if the patient was hypovolemic, the clinical assessment of the number, the size, the depth of any puncture wound can be very difficult to assess. And so if the trauma is consequent to, say, a crime-related assault, the patient may be less forthcoming with a true reflective history. So in essence here, when you're deciding on extent of CT coverage, it's probably safer to assume that patient has suffered a greater level of trauma. And the question that you should be asking then is there any part of the body which we do not need to image? So really the ongoing discussion with the clinician is probably the key point here.
Thank you so much for sharing those tips. And I think your message that the most important thing is that conversation with the clinician to correlate with the clinical findings is really loud and clear, and something that can't be underestimated, essentially, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, that's certainly something that I'll be taking away back to kind of my clinical practice, and especially when I'm doing on calls. Did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to share before we bring this podcast to an end?
Absolutely. So I'd like to acknowledge my fellow co-authors, Dr. York Tan, Dr. Hiten Patel, and Dr. Chukau Johnson. And this would not have been possible without them, without their contribution, without their support and their wisdom. And we are always happy to be contacted if anyone has any further queries about this paper.
Thank you so much, Sam. And thanks for that offer of being happy to be contacted if anyone did have any questions. Hopefully listeners will be engaged and may want to contact you to follow up. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Clinical Radiology Podcast. Do make sure to have a look and read the paper itself, as it does have useful clinical examples, images to illustrate these examples, and also the algorithm itself written out. Keep up with the latest clinical radiology news and articles on our Twitter page and our website. Thank you very much.